The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet.
This is an exclusive presentation of Podcast One Sports.
What up? This is Robert Ory.
Ory, 3 points. Buries it.
You might know me as Big Shot Bob.
To Ory for three. Oh, unbelievable. This guy is off the charts.
What's going on, Big Shot Bob?
Robert Ory from downtown.
Now that's making a statement.
The Big Shot Bob Pod. My name is Rob Jenners. I'm the producer of this show. Let's welcome Jamie Maggio back to the show. Hi, Jamie.
Insert the applause track.
And insert add golf clap. Hashtag add golf clap. And of course, seven-time NBA champion Robert Ory is with us.
The NOLA clap for Jamie.
You know, there it is.
Think about the NOLA clap.
What is the NOLA clap?
Sounds like a...
NOLA. NOLA. Like New Orleans? NOLA. Yeah. This is you got to look it up.
It's Mardi Gras week, so I didn't know what you were going for there.
It's the NOLA clap. Yeah, it's okay. Mardi Gras time.
I like it.
You know, crawfish, baby.
if you would do us a favor, if you're enjoying the show here, just when you head over to Apple, throw us a rating and a review. That helps this show tremendously. So if you can do that, guys like Rick Higgins, who were very impressed with the show so far, good insight, awesome guests. And we got another one this week. The biggest story, I think, of the week seemed to be the national anthem in Dallas.
Yes.
So I don't know if there's a better way to get into that story than to welcome the owner of the Dallas Mavericks, Mark Cuban, to the show.
Where are you at now?
I'm in Glendale, California.
Oh, man. Dallas got 3 inches of snow. It's crazy.
You know, my son's at Texas A&M. He was telling me, like, Dad, it's snowing, so I need your Netflix code. I need all these codes so I can ride. I'm like, okay. So I can't believe it's snowing in Texas.
My wife's an Aggie.
Oh, she is?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. My sister-in-law, my wife, my niece, they're surrounding me, man. I hate it.
Oh.
You're covered up, man.
Think about this. When your son plays football for Texas A&M, then they play Alabama, and I'm like, oh, who do I root for? Okay, blood before anything. So,
Yeah, I know.
It was.
But it's not a fair fight anyway, so it don't matter.
Now, that one is true. That one is true. It's like you'd be like, this for Alabama. I'm like,
But they pay more at Alabama. So that's
Hey, but Aggies got more money. They just don't know how to do it like Alabama.
They just don't know where to spend it. That's right.
How are you, Mark? Besides freezing your rear end off in Dallas, man.
You know, another day in COVID paradise, waiting for this shit to end like everybody else, man.
God bless, man. Well, I mean, you were kind of at the our biggest story of the week this week involved you, so I figured we'd start the damn show with it, man.
Sure, whatever you want.
Can you kind of unfold some of the national anthem stuff for me? Because I was like, sure. I've heard like 8 versions of this story, and I don't know which of them is right.
Well, all I said, just so you know, the only thing I said publicly was confirming that we had not played it for the first 12 games when we didn't have fans. I never said we weren't going to play it. I never... You know, cancel it. That's all nonsense, right? So here's how it all came together. I'm a national anthem guy, right? I mean, my dad was in the Navy, fighting 2 wars, was wounded. My uncle flew Air Force, and just, you know, the way I was raised, you know, you respect everybody and their beliefs, but you know, you stand and put your hand over your heart. That's just it. You know, you don't force anybody else to do anything. And so over the 20 years I've owned the Mavs, you know, here in Dallas and traveling around the league, you know. It, as Rob will tell you, when they're playing the national anthem, it's not like people rush to their seats to be there to stand up with their hands over their hearts, right? They don't get there on time. They walk around the concourse. You know, I intentionally over the years have gone on concourses, you know, at our games and at football games, wherever, and just look to see if anybody stopped, you know, put the hot dog down, put the beer down. Some people do, most don't. There's people who don't, you know, they don't rush back to their seats. Some don't even take their hats off. And that bothered me. Right. And then over, you know, the last 4 years, really, you know, as I've really listened to people, particularly, you know, African-American players talk about what the anthem does or doesn't mean to them, it started to take on new meaning. You know, there was a point in time and, you know, 2005, we had a player and I don't want to mention his name because it'll just, you know, get him involved all over again. Right. Who said the national anthem didn't represent him. And, you know, and he got crushed. And when I said I supported him, I got crushed. I got emails saying, end this, UN lover this, UN lover that. And I wrote a blog post that I've since taken down because I posted the names and email addresses of the people who said all that.
Mm-hmm.
And people went looking for them, right? And I don't want somebody to get, you know, to get hurt and people got fired and all of this stuff. And so, you know, and fast forward to the bubble and people were weaponizing the American anthem, right? And so it wasn't about, okay, you love your country the way you choose, you know, because that's what liberty is all about. I love my country. I get to choose how I love it, right? You don't get to tell me that. That's liberty, right? Correct. I get to love my country how I see fit. And so going into this season, there were questions. Would guys kneel? Would guys stand? Would it be a hand over the heart? Whatever. And I thought, you know what? I talked to the NBA. I said, look, we don't have fans. And I know when we get fans, we'll have to play the national anthem. But we don't have fans, so I'm not going to play. And they said, effectively, okay, well, you're the one owner that could, that's willing to try that stuff and is willing to take the heat. So let's see what happens. And so I didn't play it. And we told, you know, first game, we told the other team, it was preseason game, forget who it was, we told them we weren't going to be playing. No need to line up, right? And, okay, second game, we told them. No one said a word. You know, third game, and we're telling media and everybody. So, you know, no one said a word. And then literally I forgot because it just getting normal. And so, you know, 12, 13th game in, somebody noticed. And it wasn't like we weren't ever going to play the anthem, but then all of a sudden, the shitstorm hit. But, you know, the behind it was more, look, if people, if it wasn't important enough for people to show up in time for it, right? If it's weaponized so that people, you know, that love their country differently than, you know, you may love your country, you know, get hated because of it. Let's see what happens if we don't play it and if anybody noticed. You know, because if they didn't get there in time, if they don't care enough to show up in time or to stop walking on the concourse, I bet they're not even going to notice it's missing. And for the most part, you know, and we didn't have fans, but for the most part, that's what happened. And then all of a sudden, you know, when everybody started finding out that we hadn't played it because a reporter accidentally realized that we hadn't been playing it, that's when everything hit last week. And, you know, to me, the moral of the story is this country is defined, you know, by liberty. And liberty means you have the right to love this country as you see fit. And not you, not me, not anybody has the right to tell somebody, you know, how to love this country. I mean, you can say whatever you want, right?
Yeah.
But when we start questioning, you know, how each other loves this country, that's what divides us. It's not, okay, we got to play the anthem, because the reality, I'm geeky, right? So when all this stuff starts happening and we're looking into it, I'm getting online and I'm, you know, and I already knew the history of Francis Scott Key and how he, you know, was pro-slavery effectively. And the words of the, you know, second, third and fourth verses talking about slaves and free men. Right. And, you know, that's, you know, very, not just disappointing, but it's wrong. So I knew that history part, but I wanted to find out, you know, where people really experienced the national anthem. Because if this is supposed to be such, you know, the song that brings us together, everybody should be experiencing it somewhere, right? Well, if you think about it, other than military events and sporting events, if you haven't gone to a sporting event, when was the last time you were there when they played the anthem? And I looked it up, only 34% of Americans go to sporting events. And you figure another 10% are connected to the military somehow for military events, right? So where are, you know, the other 50%+ experiencing the anthem? They're probably not. And then there's some, you know, some sporting events, you'll see the anthem on television, right? And I ask some people, you stand up when the anthem plays on television?
No, of course not.
They probably don't. They probably go get a beer.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, nobody. Yeah. And so it's like, you know, it was kind of a social experiment, a personal experiment. I wanted to see if anybody cared. Because it bothered me that people didn't care enough, right? And it bothered me that people were weaponizing it and trying to force their version of patriotism on other people when the ultimate definition of liberty is being able to love this country as you see fit. And all these people that they're saying don't love their country, I mean, you wouldn't even believe the emails I got, that don't love their country, 99.99% of the Americans in this country do love this country. You know, if you didn't care, if you didn't love this country, you wouldn't say anything. You just wouldn't give a damn, right? You just ignore the whole thing. Yeah. And so, you know, all this hypocrisy and all this, you know, just anger and pretending that, you know, this is supposed to be a song that unifies us, when the reality is what sets us, what really divides us, is that people try to force their version of patriotism on other people. So that's kind of the background on it.
Yeah, for me, it's you know, we both got a little background. My dad spent 25 plus years in the military. He was in the Army. And I remember going to an event. It was a boxing match, because that's one of the things that he and I will always share when the end of the season. We would go to a boxing match in Vegas. And I remember the anthem was played, and he stopped. And he just stood there, and people kept walking. And you could see that he was like a little upset that people didn't appreciate it, you know. And for me, that was a moment that I realized that it's in my dad's heart, what he did in Vietnam, to go out and fight for this country when the country didn't fight for him at the time and put him in a position to succeed. But he still fought for this country, because he did it not for himself. He did it for, you know, his wife at the time, my mother, me, and for my kids and the kids on. That's what he was fighting for. And sure. I think a lot. And I think also he was fighting for the freedom of speech. And that's one of the things that people sometimes forget, like, you know, the freedom of speech part in my mind, because there's times when people say, OK, you can't say that, but I have the freedom of speech. It might not be right and you might not like it, but I have the right to say it. And that's what makes this country so great, that we have the ability to come out and say what we want to say, you know. And I don't think people should get mad. You should just step back and listen to people. You know, some people say some crazy stuff and off the wall stuff, and you shouldn't listen to that. But a lot of times when you see people in bad positions, they're trying to get into a better position. They're speaking from the heart. They're speaking from what has affected them, and just open up and listen and don't be closed minded. I think with this whole anthem stuff, people became closed minded and didn't want to listen, because my dad, he says, I hear what they're saying. And I know what they're saying. I respect what they're saying, but, you know, it doesn't bother me, because I know what I did for this country. I fought for this country. I laid my life on the line for this country. And you just got to sit back and say what's best for you and what you think at that time. And he said, you know, hey, it's a peaceful protest. You're hearing what they have to say, so I'm good with it.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, we say in liberty and justice for all.
Correct.
Right. We you know, the Pledge of Allegiance was supposed to mean something. But that word
out of the schools.
Yeah, you know.
Can't do that anymore.
Yeah, but even so, right? I mean, liberty is supposed to be a foundation for this country, right? You have liberty to, you know, to practice whatever religion you want to practice. We don't look and say, okay, that's not the right way to do religion. Well, some people do, right?
Yeah,
but you
some
get
people
your
do.
Choice, right? Yeah. You get your choice. And it's the same way with loving your country. Instead of saying, you know, why don't you approach the anthem the exact same way as I do? Just ask the question, do you love your country? Yes or no?
Yes.
And then 99% of people are going to say yes. You know, do you have a vision for this country where you think you can make it better? Yes. Otherwise, you wouldn't do anything and we wouldn't be having this conversation, right? You know, if you didn't care, we wouldn't be talking about it. We don't talk about the things we don't care about. And so when we weaponize the anthem, that just really bothered me.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of people, my dad included, who thought the anthem was special, and it shouldn't be played all the time. You know, it was meant for special events. And, you know, it's just, you know, it's okay. We're having this conversation. And like I said to Adam, when we talked about it, it was like, at least it wasn't because somebody got shot. You know, at least we're having this conversation because we want to have this conversation. And yeah, people are yelling and people are angry, but at least we're having the conversation and it's not about some tragedy.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was Adam's position on it when you guys had that conversation?
Well, no, he was like, look, there's no fans, so we can try different things. But when there's going to be fans, we're going to have to play it. You know, and I'm like, OK, well, let's just see what happens. And he was like, OK, well, you're the one owner that can probably deal with the, you know, what's going to come your way.
A kick back,
and,
if you will.
And I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, OK, I can deal with that. And we'll play it when we have fans. And look, by the way, we've been playing it the last 3 games, and we don't have paying fans yet. We're only letting healthcare workers, military, and first responders that have been vaccinated. Those are the people that are coming in. And so, you know, but we still started playing it.
also, my both grandfathers served in the military. My father was in Vietnam. My brother was in Afghanistan. So I have a special reverence during the national anthem. I sing along with it. For me, it's almost like a quiet moment of reflection before the game starts and you know, things get crazy. I appreciate it. However, I also question, you know, like, why do we play it at sporting events?
There's no good reason. I mean, if you look at the history of it, like the Mavs from 1980 to 1996 did not play the national anthem. We played God Bless America. And it wasn't until the original owners, the Carters, sold it that they started to play it. The Cubs didn't play it till 1967. MLS didn't play it during their bubble this summer. UFC doesn't play it because Dana White thought it was bad luck, right? Bad luck, not because he dismissed the anthem, but because the first pay-per-view fight he had, the anthem caused them to run over and their pay-per-view window ended, right? And so it's not like we have to do it, you know, and, you know, 34% of people really, you know, when someone gets into an argument with you about the anthem, ask them when the last time they heard it, not at a sporting or military event. It's just people, you know, talk like it's the most important thing, but they don't show that in terms of their actions, you know, and that's so disappointing. Because look, I can, whether it's the national anthem or another song, right, that we can all rally behind, I think that would be great. You know, My Country, 'Tis of Thee, America the Beautiful, This Land is Your Land, whatever. It'd be great if there was something that we all got behind. But the reality is it's still just a song, you know, and we don't play that song when other people go to work. We don't think it's so important that the people who don't experience it should hear it all the time. Right. We don't find ways to make sure everybody in this country hears it. And so I agree with you. I mean, I don't know why we make such a big deal of it. I mean, we could just have, you know, 1 minute where people face the flag and think whatever they want to think. You know, it's just the anthem was not the anthem wasn't always the anthem. Right. It wasn't until 1931 that the Star Spangled Banner became the national anthem. Before that, they used to play either My Country, 'Tis of Thee, or this other song called Hail Columbia, song I'd never heard of. And then when I went online to listen to it, I still had never heard it. And that's what they played all the time. And so, you know, we make this big deal because some people want everybody to love this country the way they do. And I think that's the unfortunate thing. You know, we're so blessed to have the liberties that we do, but, you know, we can't create these false equivalencies that either you love it the way I do or you're a communist. That's why I can't tell you. I got hundreds of emails calling me a communist. How this all turned me into a communist, the number one capitalist that you've ever met, I have no idea.
You get more support than you did, you know, communist comments.
You know what's crazy? Depends on their color and how old they are. If they were white and older, I was a communist. If they were people of color, it was a thank you.
Do you know a timeline? Do you guys have a timeline on when you're going to start letting fans in general? Or are we still too far out?
The number of cases in Dallas has gone down from like 3,000 to 4,000 a day to 750. And so that's why we started letting some fans in.
Okay.
And now with the number of people being vaccinated going up, we figured we'd test it by letting, you know, like I said, military first responders, et cetera, that have been vaccinated. So that gives us a chance to get things together. And so we're going to try to increase the numbers that we let in. Each game we'll add more and more and more. And hopefully as we get towards the end of the season, there'll be enough people who have been vaccinated. Not that we're only going to let vaccinated people in, but it'll feel a lot safer and we can create and we can allow in a lot more people.
Those courtside seats open up again?
Yeah, we don't have that.
Well, you guys have one pesky fan I know about, but do you think that fans, as they come back in, should be that close to the court and the players?
Well, right now we're still figuring things out. So no, they're not that close to the court, right? They're at least 10 feet away. But going forward, yeah, we're going to get there, right? Hopefully sooner rather than later. And so it's going to happen, but I think, you know, we're really trying to push and get people vaccinated. And as those numbers increase, then yeah, we're, you know, because we want to get, you know, if the trade-off is, you know, dealing with unruly fans, then we'll kick out the unruly fans because we want to get things back to normal as much as possible. And not so much from a revenue perspective, just make the country better, you know, make things better perspective.
Get back to normal, yeah.
I thought unruly fans were a part of the game. That what makes it special, man. You had to have someone pick out in the crowd and talk trash to.
No doubt, but right? But, yeah. You know, there's a line you can't cross, right?
Yeah.
And it's not like players don't talk back. It's not like players don't talk back, right? You know that, right?
I think the players love the fact that, okay, you said something like, get him out of here. You know, that's the power of the players. You know, you mentioned Adam Silver earlier, and I've always enjoyed the conflict between you and David Stern. God rest his soul. And so is it a different relationship? It seems like it's a more bending situation with Adam. Adam seems like he bends more for the players and for the owners, but David Stern was more stricter. So is it true that Adam is a little bit more of a joy to work with? You know, I'm not saying anything bad about David Stern.
David
I just used to love the conflicts y'all had.
David and I got along great, right? So what happened outside in the media and the fines, right? It was totally different how we were one-on-one. Right. Because we both had it's almost like the anthem thing. Right. We both had the best interest of the NBA. Now, we disagreed on how to get there a lot. Right. A lot.
Yeah. Oh, but, I did too agree. I agree with you on a lot of things you would say.
Right. And so, you know, we disagreed on a lot of stuff, but we both had the best interest of the NBA. Yeah. But Adam is a little bit more bending. He's a little bit more open minded than David was. David had his vision where it's like, this is the way we have to do it. Right. And that's why we conflicted more because, when he was set in stone on things, and I was like, yo, it's not 1985 anymore, David, And so I was trying to push things, you know, when I was the young guy, just raising hell. But now people are used to me too, right? It's just like, you know, I've been doing the same things for 20 years. Like even the refs don't even look at me anymore.
It's funny because the NBA is – it's a revolving door, and I mean, it's always trending. Think new things, because as an analyst now, I look at the way the NBA's play, and sometimes I shake my head. You know, when the guys come down, they shooting, like, for instance, I think Denver shot 59 threes last night, and I'm saying, shit, we didn't shoot 59 shots total in a game, you know, something.
Yeah, so I know.
It's a different game, and I know my skill set would have been better for this game than it was then, because the first thing they told me to do was get bigger, get stronger. And now it's like they saying get leaner, get faster. Yep. And so my point is, you have one of my best friends working for you, Michael Finley. I love him to death.
Yeah,
I know you guys sit around and talk about it. So how do you relate the two? Which one do you like better? Because you won a championship the old way.
Yeah, the old way, yeah. Well, what's changed, Rob, is that, you know, used to be like when you were playing, if someone shot 40% from three, they're knocked down, right? Now, you know, and if guys, you'd see some guys in a gym that if there was nobody in the gym by themselves, they couldn't shoot 40% on threes.
Yeah.
Now, everybody practices threes, right? Everybody knows that that's where the money's at and that you don't have to be the biggest, strongest, fastest. If you can knock down a shot like that, you know, you're going to get paid. And so kids coming in today can all shoot, or they're going to work on that part of their game. And because that opens up the court even more. And what's even crazier, so like back in 2012, I'll never forget, I tried to tell Dirk, I'm like, Dirk, look, when we look at you shooting 2 feet behind a three-point line, right, 2 feet behind it, you shoot 50%. And he's like, really? I'm like, because no one guards you back there, right? No one, you know, when you guys were coming up, right, you guarded up to the three-point line because you wanted to make it as crowded as possible. Now guys can shoot a foot, 2, 3, 4 feet, you know, or more beyond that line, and that creates more space. And the more three-point shooters you have, the more space everybody has. So if we've got, you know, if we play five out and give Luka the ball, he's going wherever he wants. You give Jokic the ball and people cut from five out, you know, there's space everywhere. But if, you know, if the team's packing it in and daring you to shoot, you know, 59 threes, we would take that all day long. Now, you know, sometimes when those threes aren't falling for both teams, it looks really, really ugly.
Yes, right? It does. Yes. Yeah. Right? Because, but you the know? Thing about that, and then they have no other choice because they're like, well, we don't work on anything else.
They live and die by that. They live and die by that.
It's not even that you don't work on it, right? It's just that, you know, the guys just aren't prepared to do it, right? Like, we'll post up Luka, you know, we got Boban, who's, you know, who's trying to shoot threes, but he's going right by the bucket. You know, so, you know, it's just, you can do it the other way, but then, you know, because you never know when you're going to get hot, right? So you might have missed those first 33s. Like, you know, you've had nights when you're 3 for 29, right?
Right.
But, you know, the next one's going in, and that changes the game. And really the way it's played out, the teams that make the most threes, even if you're a bad team, if you make the most threes, you're going to win. Now, in a playoff series, you know, the better team is probably going to make those threes more often. But, you know, now there's 20, 30, 40 guys shooting 40% or better from three, and that's really the basis of what's changed. And you've got to be able to get those guys open. And the only way to really get those guys open is to, you know, play high pick and roll or to spread out and let them go one-on-one, have somebody drive and kick. And that's where you would have been good, right? Because you can play pick and roll and you can drive and kick and, you know, you can finish if you got space. And you'd be running, right? I mean, you'd be out there running and finishing. And, you know, that's what teams try to do these days. And, you know, and when a team is making them, like Denver,
yeah,
doesn't matter who it is. I mean, yeah. Detroit beats, you know, who was it? Maybe it was the Lakers. I forget. And they had Sadiq Bey, the rookie, go 7 for 7.
Yes.
When somebody's knocking them down, they're knocking them down, right? And you're not going to beat them.
You brought up Luka before. What kind of kid is he, man? He just seems like he's got one of those kids that could be the future of the league in the way he presents himself, his personality, the fun he has playing the game, behind the scenes, off the court. What kind of kid is he?
Good kid, man. Great guy. Great, great. Funny as hell, right? Loves, you know, Serbian 1980s rock and roll, you know.
Wow.
Just, you know, he's his own man. But he loves kids. He loves having fun. Got the big smile all the time.
Always.
You know, we'll hang out and talk to anybody. You know, kids shooting on the court, he's going to, you know, go shoot with them and have fun with them. Just doesn't have that attitude. Like, it's, you know, my way only. It's just, you know, just you just want to hang out and have a drink with him. And it's great. He's just a really, really good kid.
One of my favorite things you did with your recently, we were talking about the Wall Street madness that's been going on with all the doggy coin and Bitcoin and who's buying GameStop and why do people own AMC. But one of my favorite things that you did was you got your kids involved, which I thought was awesome. What are you doing with your kids?
Yeah, so, you know, my son, it's funny, like, my kids are 11, 14, and 17 now, and they're all on TikTok, right? And they get all their information on TikTok. And by the way,
that's
on
dangerous.
TikTok. So no, it's actually not bad, you know. So, but if you want to see me dance in my $1,000 pants, a whole lot of shopping going on.
Why are we not looking at this right now? What is happening?
M Cuban on TikTok.
I had to look
so
that up.
Much fun. But so there's the fun dance part of TikTok, but it's kind of become the social network for kids. And he watches a lot of business videos. He's 11, right?
Wow.
But that's where he gets his information. It's crazy, crazy. Like, you can't get him to read a book, but kids these days will watch videos to learn instead. And that's not a bad thing, I'm figuring out, as long as they're learning.
As long as they're learning.
Yeah. And so I started, you know, he started asking me about Dogecoin, which I call Doggy Coin too.
Yeah, we're calling Doggy Coin.
You know, and so I said, well, if you want to learn about this, I'll set up an account for you and I'll trade for you, right? You tell me what you want to do. And so we set up an account, and he bought some AMC, which went up and down. And I tried to explain to him, you know, supply and demand, you know, this is why the stock's going up and down. He made a little money there. He bought a share of Sony and a share of Disney, and he made some money there. But now he's got 500 shares of Doggy Coin, right? Or 500 Doggy Coins, which he bought. His first ones he bought for under a penny, and now they're up to like 5.5 cents each. But they did go up to eight cents each. So he was really excited. But now he's underwater because he bought more when the price was higher.
Oh.
So, you know, but he spent maybe $30 on Dogecoin. And so in total. And so I'm like, this is how you learn about the markets. This is how you learn why stocks go up and down. This is how you feel the joy of when it goes up and the pain of when it goes down. You know, this is where your allowance goes now. And so
He gets an allowance?
Yeah, he gets a little allowance. I make my kids work for their money. My wife, you have to. Yeah, my wife slips him some money that pisses me off. But if you want something, same way my dad did to me. You want something, you got to go get a job and earn it.
Exactly.
Work for it, man. Work for it.
I tell my son that all the time.
And how's that going, Rob?
Actually, it's going good. You should see him. He has a stack in his room, like of hundreds. And believe it or not, during the pandemic, my wife and I was going to him borrowing money. He got so much money, man. So we was going to borrow money for him at times. He like,
coming to your house.
And he start charging us interest too. We don't pay him back at a certain time. I'm like, are you serious, dude? The other day he got mad because we was like, okay, it's a little corner store. It's like, just walk down and get you something to eat. So out of the blue, he goes and comes back. He says, wait, you didn't ask us. We wanted to, y'all didn't pay for it. So I just went on my own. I'm like, okay. I see how it works. I see. But he is really, it's so weird because our kids today are so smart. My son was really into politics in the past years. He's really into Black Lives Movement. He's really into everything that's, I would call, adult nature. Because at his age, at 15 years old, I didn't care about politics. All I care about was, when is a new video game coming out? When are we going to play basketball? When are we going to play any type of sport? And so these kids nowadays, because of the social media, because of the electronics, they're so astute. They know everything. And so you just have to sit back and learn from them, because I learn from my kids every day.
Every day, man. It's always changing, and they're one step ahead. That's why it's hard. You're like, I'm a tech guy, so I got to keep up, right?
Yeah, you definitely got to keep up.
Yeah, I can't let them show me up, so I got to stay one step ahead. That's why I know my TikTok moves.
Exactly.
I take financial planning from Ori and Cuban's kids.
Right?
Yeah, for real. What are we doing? We're doing it all wrong.
I know. Before this, though, I always want to say, I want to say this, too. I want to say thank you for the opportunity to sign with you guys. I don't know if you remember that, but it was right after my 2005 championship with the Spurs. My people reached out to you, and you offered more money to come play for you guys than I did with the Spurs, but I stayed with the Spurs. And I don't know if you even remember that. You told my representative that, oh, I can respect that. I appreciate him saying that, you know, he's in a system now. He could come make more money, but he feel like he has a system, you know.
And so, and what happened in 2006, though?
Oh. Hey, what happened in 2007, though?
I know.
No, we don't talk about that.
But, you know, and I just love, I always had a respect for you, and I had a love for you. So my question is, when you running for president, man? Come on.
Not going to happen. Not going to happen.
Never.
Because you have to give up the Dallas Mavericks, and I know.
Not even, man. It's just, when Trump was out there, then I thought about it and talked about it. But, yeah, that's just not going to happen.
All right. I forgot. And also, since you're a Texas guy now, can you go buy the Texans, please?
No, man.
You got the money.
But I get asked, with all that stuff with JJ going on, now I get asked that all the time. But no, not going to happen.
Yeah, come on. Just loan me the money and I'll go buy it. How about that?
There you go. I got you.
That works.
Jamie, I've never heard you so quiet.
Well, I'm listening to the greats here, so.
All right, Mark. Yeah, nope. We'll let you run, man. We appreciate your time so much.
Thank you, Mark.
Always, man,
you're always
it.
So great. We appreciate
see you guys.
You.
Always
Mark,
a pleasure.
We appreciate right, it. Good Mark. Luck the rest of the season.
I'll take it.
Hey, more importantly, stay healthy. Stay healthy, amen, because that's y'all problem. Stay healthy.
Yep. Appreciate it, guys. Take
all right,
care.
Mark. All right. Very good to have Mark Cuban join us and take a half an hour.
You know, I forgot to tell Mark. I was like, man, I've been so happy. And I don't mean this in a disrespectful way, but when you warming up and then you have to stop and listen to the anthem, and then when you're in Canada, you have to listen to the Canadian anthem.
That's
too.
Right. They gotta play
it's
both.
Hard to warm back up sometime, man. You have to go out and run. And it was always bad when I started coming off the bench. I'm like, crap, that's even more time where I don't get to warm up. But I like it when they show the anthem and then they let the guys warm up a little bit more. I know people probably said, well, you sat on the bench, dude. Out of the anthem, you sat there for a while. Yeah, but I sat there, but I ran in the back. I did things to keep myself warm. But I'm all about playing the anthem, you know, because it gives people that time to reflect, especially like people like Jamie and myself who had family to serve in the military. Because every time I sat there, I might not put my hand on my heart, but I look down and I thank God for allowing my father to make it out of Vietnam. I thank God for all the people, not just me, for all the people's whose parents, brothers, sisters, mothers, cousins, whatever, to make it home safely from all these wars and everything that's happening in the world. So that was my way of reflecting when the anthem was played. I didn't put my hand on my heart. I just dropped my head and thank God.
But Jamie, you had a good point there about the end. What prompted? Why is it that big of a deal if you don't play it? There's no rule.
There's no rules, but it is tradition, and I like tradition, and I like the rhythm of the, you know, when you get there and the anthem starts, and like what Rob said, that's kind of like a moment of meditation and a moment to pause. But why is it there? You know, for the Olympics, and you have all these different countries represented, that makes a lot of sense.
That's different.
Me.
Yeah.
But for this, and now when, you know, as Mark said, when it becomes weaponized, you have to start thinking about it a little bit differently and questioning things. So, and you know, unfortunately, it does not represent everyone the same way.
But, you know, it's weird. That moment of silence instead of playing it could be a good thing because, you know, I use it as a moment to reflect and thank God for allowing, you know, people to come home safe. So that would be a good way for people to sit back and not go get popcorn, you know, not talk to the person next to you. You know, and I know it's not boiling down to religion, but, you know, reflect on what's been good to you and what this country has provided for you and whatnot.
One of my favorites, by the way, San Antonio with the mariachis.
Yes, yes, they're always good. Yeah,
they are good.
The old AT&T Center.
Yes.
They are good. Well, one of the big stories this week, and obviously, Rob, I wanted to get your take on it because it involved LeBron James, was, and I put it on the show sheet as a shout out to my friends at Sports Nation who call it Phantom of the Flopera, which I always think is great. But we should have asked Mark about this, how he feels about the flopping. LeBron got kind of caught on one. And I think this was it against Milwaukee? Is I think is who it was. The announcers.
Memphis.
Sorry, you're right. The announcers, none too thrilled with LeBron's flop.
Are you serious?
Oh, my goodness.
Are you kidding me, man? You got this. This is getting out of hand, man. This is getting out of hand, man. I mean, that's
just as bad as you could possibly imagine.
That is awful, horrible. Whatever other words you come up that are synonyms with those is what that was.
So they were not too happy with LeBron.
You know, as great as an athlete as LeBron is, there's two things he can't do good. That's flop. And take a charge. If you ever watch LeBron take a charge, he like gets hit and like, well, I'm bigger and stronger than most people on the court. How do I fall to make it look? He kind of bends his knee and just drops down. I'm like,
like LeBron, Jamie did it. Take a mannequin fall.
Take a charge. But it's some great floppers in this league. I was a flopper at times. Vlade,
did you? I was going to ask you. Did you flop?
Smart,
you know, flopping?
I think no, it's just an art form. You know, it's some of the things like I remember.
It's like my improv.
My biggest flop ever, I remember, it was so funny. We were playing the Utah Jazz in a playoff game, and it was close. I was going to sit and pick and roll for Manu Ginobili, another flopper. And all of a sudden, the dude touched me. I just jumped to the side, and I literally slid from the 3-point line to almost to half court and got the foul call. And so it's strategic. You can't do it all the time. There's got to be times when you do it. When you get guys like, you know, Marcus Smart, who does it all the time.
Yeah.
And I love Marcus Smart. I think he's the heart and soul of the Celtics. But refs look at you like, come on, man, get up. Hey, did you see the one with Jimmy Butler where he act like he got hit in the face?
Okay.
And he like looking around like, is anybody watching me?
There are some that are the LeBron one from the other night was pretty egregious, though, because I don't even think I watched it back. Didn't look like anybody even touched him.
No.
And it just, I think maybe someone grazed him with like an elbow or something, and it became, oh, like, I mean, just like Academy Award nomination, you know?
It's, but you think about it. It's like the one thing about the league is everybody flops. My thing is the flopping on the shots. And that's my biggest pet peeve. All of a sudden, I'm doing a flyby and you jump into me like, oh, he fouled me. I said, dude, I just jumped beside you. You jumped into me. And if I could change one rule in the NBA, that would be the rule where if you're not going straight up and down and you lunges to someone, that is a charge. I don't care what you say. There's no difference in me driving and jumping into you. If I jump by, just because I leave the air doesn't put me in the wrong. You know, I can jump up and down all I want to, but for you to catapult yourself into me, that is a foul, offensive foul. So I'm off my soapbox.
Who was the biggest flopper in your day? Do you remember?
Outside of Dirk. I'm just kidding. You know, it was so many guys because that was a part of the game.
It was just part of it.
It was just a part of the game. I played with Manu, who would flop, myself, Derek Fisher. The guys that were known as defensive players were the guys who flopped because they knew how to, once you put that body on them, you would fall back. But, for the most part, flopping kind of went out the way as soon as they said fine, because you know how guys appreciate their money in their pocket. They're like, oh, we can fine now. I'm not going to flop anymore.
I'm good. A couple of quick topics from around the NBA, too. I have my number of the week for you this week. I always try to bring some sort of stupid number in, but the Utah Jazz are on an 18-1 run. Of those, wow, they've won 16 of those games by double digits of their 18-1 run. 16 of them have been double-digit wins.
The thing about the Utah Jazz is people don't respect them, because I think when you look around the league, sometimes you look at guys that they look at them weird. You know, take Rudy Gobert for instance, hell of a player, but for some reason, guys just don't respect him like they respect other players. It's like, oh, he's a shot blocker. I don't know if it had to do anything with him touching everything and his mannerism and with the COVID-19 thing, but he's a hell of a player. He does exactly what he needs to do. He blocks shots. He protects the paint. He rim runs for dunks. And then you got Spider, who's a hell of a player. He just goes out and he's killing it right now. He's, you know, we always talk about MVPs. We talk about LeBron. We talking about Embiid. We talking about Giannis. He has the best record in the league. Why nobody's talking about Spider? He's playing out of his world. He has him with the best record. And I know what the problem is. He plays in Utah. And nobody really respects Utah because they're in Utah.
Well, they'll have a chance to earn some respect this season, it seems like. You mentioned MVP candidates. You didn't bring up Steph Curry. He's having a lights out year.
He's having a yes.
Can a guy like Steph, though, win an MVP on a team that's not that good, though?
No. No. I think they stretched it when they gave MVP to Westbrook, and the only reason they gave it to him because he was averaging triple-double. Even though he was on a winning team, they weren't on a top-three winning team. And I think that's what it boils down to. If you go back the history of the NBA and who they give the MVP to, the teams, the guys that usually get it, they're in either top-three or they have to do something extraordinary like what Westbrook did, because we hadn't seen that since, you know, Oscar Robertson.
Jamie, should Steph win MVP?
I mean, that's the thing, right? I think that one player on a team that's not doing that well is not going to get the recognition because your team's not winning, right?
Yeah.
You can't say that Steph is not one of the greatest players. I mean, I said it in the last time that he's one of my favorite players to watch in the game today. Can I go back to Utah? I'm going out of order here.
Go.
Is it sustainable, Rob? I mean, they're totally steamrolling people now, but it seems like you would rather be doing that at the second half of the season than the first half.
I want to steamroll people from the beginning. You want to steamroll everybody and show them your dominance and show you that we can play. Because a lot of times you look at teams, let's go back to last season. Oh, look what the Phoenix Suns are doing. Da da da. Oh, they dropped off. because you want to, you don't want to, for me, even though I love playing for the Spurs, they didn't get recognition when they were steamrolling people. And it had a lot to do with the pop and the culture. But sometimes as a player, you want to be recognized for what you're doing on the court. You want to get that recognition so you can say, hey, look, I'm good. Don't think we're not good. Don't sleep on us now. So, and I know Donovan Mitchell's that type of player, you know, from even when he should have won MVP, Rookie of the Year, and Rudy Gobert is trying to reestablish himself. You know, Bojan Bogdanovic, one of the greatest players to play in this game. He's so good. And Mike Conley is finally settling in for that team. He's playing good. You can go down the list of guys that are playing so good for them. So they need, LeBron said it best, They want their damn respect.
They do. Yeah, they do. They're playing like it. Actually, we do have a couple NFL stories to get to this week, which is wild because we're, what, a week and a half, 2 weeks removed from the Super Bowl now. How great was drunk Tom Brady? Did you see Brady? And the reason why it was so great to me, it's like, look, Tom Brady's a human being. He's not a cyborg. He got hammered on a boat. He was throwing the Lombardi trophy around in the middle of the water. I was like, that was great to me.
His daughter screaming, no, daddy. It's like,
what are you doing? He's just, and the best was the, did you see him hurl the Lombardi trophy from one boat to another in the middle of the parade? Well, the woman of the guy who designed the trophy, I guess, is all like, we haven't slept in days because he desecrated the trophy.
Come on.
What can't they get the hell out of here with this? He threw it
times. It doesn't have the novelty out there anymore.
He's got seven of them. If he drops that one in the water, he'll go get another one. I mean, you know,
it's weird how it's amazing me how people overreact to so many things. Oh. It's a damn trophy. Nobody said anything when the ball of our trophy fell off in Houston, and it has a huge dent in the side of the trophy because the ball literally fell off. And it's a trophy. It can be replaced. Nobody says how the hockey players treat their trophies. Ain't no telling where that trophy's been and how they kiss on it and pour beer in it. And, so many nasty things with that. So stop it. You know, you weren't able to sleep. I'm sure your ass, if you made that trophy, you made a lot of money off that trophy. You sleeping really well in your $1 million house, your $10 million house probably. So stop it. People are just so dramatic at times. But the thing, going back to drunk Brady, I love it. If you go back and look at a lot of my pictures from after we won a championship, hell, I was drunk too. That's why you wear the sunglasses. You know, you celebrate. It's what it's all about. You ended the season. You did exactly what you set out to do. Win a championship. Now you can go party, hang out with your family. But I don't know. I wonder how Pop would have reacted when we were on the Riverwalk if I would have threw the Larry O'Brien trophy
from one boat to another,
Manu or someone to another boat. It'd have been funny, but you know, Riverwalk's not that deep, so we probably could
have. They caught it.
We should send some divers down to recover it.
Look at it.
It's party time. Let them party. I'm glad all of them kept. You know, it's not like the Cleveland Cavaliers when they all took their shirts off and ran around like that. So,
I want to know: do you think Bill Belichick was watching the Super Bowl?
No.
Oh.
He probably not.
No, I think he does. I think he can't avoid it. I think he's such a football mind that he can't not watch it.
Now he's probably eating a fake tuna sandwich from Subway, knowing him.
No, they did the research. That's not fake tuna. That's real tuna. That turned out to be a non-story, by the way.
I know, it's funny, but it's so funny to see him do a commercial and then they just rip the sleeves off. Bill, I would have loved to play for him because...
Would you, though?
As players, you like nonsense coaches. You know, that's what I respected about Pop. I respected about Phil and Rudy. Those guys, those non-nonsense, because for me, there is a time to work and there's a time to play. And because all work and no fun can hurt athletes. But I just would have loved to play for him because he seemed like he's so laser focused and he's getting the job done. You know, it might have been some things we could clash with.
Huh. I'm sorry. I think there's less fun, all work, and then, you know, then the fun. I think there's less fun with Belichick.
You put your
nose to the grindstone, and then we're going to go out to dinner and have some really expensive wine. He seems like he has really created a perfect environment in that regard.
And his Noki. He loves his Noki and wine. That's his favorite thing.
You mentioned the Stanley Cup. NHL players get to take it for like 2 days and God knows what they do with it, desecrate it or drink beer out of it or eat cereal out of it. Do you get to take the Larry O'Brien trophy at any point, or does it just go straight to the trophy case?
It goes straight to the owner.
That's it?
It's weird. I remember my first championship with the Houston Rockets. I'd never even touched that trophy because it went from Dream to Otis to Vernon to Kenny to all these vets who have been in the year. So I never touched it. So the following season in 95, we went back to back. If you look at the videos, I got the trophy the most of the time because I said, damn it, I didn't touch the first one. I'm getting this one. So there are pictures of me with the trophy and champagne. And yeah, I was a little tipsy because I was so excited because we just went back to back. And so I was excited. And so let's just say this. I kept that trophy. I don't even know if I even got a chance to hold the trophies in with the Lakers because, you know, those guys, I don't think only AC was the only one on the team that had won a championship, he and I. So we kind of said, you newbies, go ahead. We've been there, done that. So
they kind of yeah. Go ahead, Shaq and Kobe. You can take these and take Shaq, your pictures
Kobe,
with them.
B-Shaw. Yeah. B-Shaw.
Go take your pictures.
Shaq, this is what you missed out in 95. Yeah, go ahead. How your business?
Okay. The other, well, there's two more NFL stories. One of them was Marshawn Lynch. Did you hear or see any of the Marshawn Lynch stuff?
No, I didn't.
Play it.
Okay, so this was Marshawn in the booth of the, and I didn't even know this was a thing, the fan-controlled football league? The FCF is a new thing that they're doing? I know, I've got the same look of confusion on my face. But he owns one of the team. Obviously, the name of the team is the Beasts. And he joined the broadcast, and there was like this tease that he was going to suit up and play. But what ended up happening was this somewhat off-color commentary from Marshawn about his pregame routine, I guess.
I'm going to go ahead and throw back this Caesar salad with these croutons and all this shit, though, right? Go ahead, take me a nice fat shit, get my stomach all right and everything. Then I'm finna go out here and try to run for 200 on a 50-yard field like was that?
Hey. Can Marshawn do color commentary on every broadcast? Because, my goodness.
He did exactly what he needed to do. Get some pub for that for that thing because FCF. Because I never heard of FCF.
Neither have I. Not until this happened. What was what was your pregame routine?
My pregame routine. In the playoffs, I would take like a 15-minute nap just to relax my mind, warm up, stretch, and then just go. You know, shoot some daggers. That's my pregame. That it was. He kept it pretty simple. You know, if you
eight,
huh?
Do you ever get nerves?
You know, it's weird. My first year, I had nerves. My second year, they kind of subsided. And I think after you win a championship, your nerves, you don't get nervous. And plus, I've always been fortunate to be on teams that were good. And when you walk into an arena, you're like, oh, we about to kick ass. You don't really get nervous unless you think you're going to win. You think you're going to lose. If you know you're going to win, you don't really get nervous. And so I've been very, very fortunate to play on teams. When we walk into an arena, oh, I know we're going to win. I think the only championship where I didn't think we were going to win was my first one. I just felt like the Knicks were a beast. And they were. Yeah, they just had defense for days, and they could do no wrong, and you know, but we won it. And then if you have to pick the next one, it would probably be the Detroit series, you know, until I thought killed their hopes in game five. And then after that, I didn't worry about anything.
You single-handedly took that upon yourself. What do you remember your first NBA finals, the nerves? Did you have any of that in like your very first finals?
Oh man, I was so nervous. Cause I was going up against Charles Oakley. And you think about it, my body was 225 pounds, 6'9", having to guard a guy who was 275, strong as an ox, could run, jump. And then he's 275. Then Anthony Mason comes in the game, who's 285.
Yeah.
Okay. Then I had Charles Smith, who wasn't as strong as those guys, but were more athletic. So, yeah, I was nervous. I was extremely nervous because it was the finals. It was the Knicks, the mecca of basketball. And it was a lot of pressure. So,
yeah. Oak might want to fight you right now. He might be coming to your house right now to fight you for no reason whatsoever.
He's too busy answering the door, getting
pasta. Oh, that's
pasta.
Right. Yeah, sorry. I forgot about that. My bad. And then the other NFL story, which was wild to me this week because it involved Houston, and we've talked about Houston plenty on this, was J.J. Watt getting released from the Texans. Mark Cuban brought it up briefly, too. I didn't see that coming. I don't know. I didn't expect it. It was just kind of threw me.
Jamie, didn't you used to date J.J.?
No.
What are we drumming up rumors now?
Oh, yeah, that's some rumors. We got to get more people to come out of that. Jamie Maggio used to date it. No, I'm just kidding, people. But she never dated JJ. I'm just kidding.
Stop it. That's a whole other podcast. But honestly, like, what is going on down there?
Yeah.
Like, what's happening in their front office that they are letting these franchise players, A, become so disenfranchised with the team that they're out? I don't get it.
You know, I wish we had my oldest son in on this one because he is a Houston sports fanatic through and through. Nick loves the Texans. He loves the Rockets. He loves the Astros. He loves everything about Houston. And when they traded Hopkins, He called me up and was like, "Dad, buy the team." I'm like, "Dude, you don't got that kind of money." I'm like, "What's wrong with you?" He's like, "I can't stand Bill. He traded away Hopkins for nothing."
It was a,
and it's just it was a bad trade. You can't get rid of the best receiver in the game for nothing. You know, everybody said, "Well, they got a running back who's been injured, a running back who's not even being talked about anymore." Yeah. You gave him up for nothing, and that was just that was taking that little bitty pebble and throwing it in the middle of the pond, and now we got the ripple effect, and it's starting to ripple out. And I think JJ seen the writing on the wall, and he knows his organization is in a tailspin right now, and he's, tornadoes come through Houston, flood comes through Houston, and JJ's trying to get to safer ground, and that's what you got to say about the situation. And I think the crazy part about it, I've had the pleasure of meeting the owner's kids. And, just like it came a situation with the Lakers where you pass it on to their kids and let them handle it. I think this is a situation where the owner needs to pass it on to his kids, let them handle the day-to-day, and really bring – because Houston, great town, great fans. And why wouldn't you want to play there? And so you got to figure out a way to how to get out of that tailspin and put your foot in your mouth as much as this organization does.
In the last 12 months, the city of Houston has lost J.J. Watt, likely Deshaun Watson, James Harden, Russell Westbrook, George Springer, Garrett Cole, and you mentioned DeAndre Hopkins. I mean, geez, in a year, probably every big superstar that's been kind of the headline of the city, gone.
Yeah, and I think about even back in 92 when I first got in the league, they almost lost Olajuwon. You know, it's just things about that happens where these owners, I don't even want to bring up the part where he said about who's running the asylum, and things of that nature. But I think owners sometimes think they're bigger than the game. They're bigger than the players. And like, yeah, you're paying these players a lot of money, but these players in return are making you a shitload of money. And so they're not understanding that it has to be a give and take. Times change. You have to evolve with time, just like players have evolved, just like the equipment has evolved to protect the players. And you need to find a way to have some common ground. And I know I was one of these guys that never talked to management when I played. I wish I would have, but it was not the thing to do back then. But now players want to know what's going on because their futures and their quote unquote legacies. And we know how players feel about their legacies. They want to cement them. And so it's at a point where they want to just say, "Hey, I need to know what's going on so I can work on this branding and work on this organization and work on getting better as a team because I want to win." Bottom line.
Yeah. Quickly, a couple things we get to the postgame presser. The big shot of the week this week. I want to hand it to Steph Curry and his wife, Aisha. Last summer, the pandemic stalled the economy, leaving a lot of people out of work, and they launched Eat, Learn, Play, which is a foundation that helps families struggling to put food on the table, and through the donations of the Alameda County Community Food Bank and Oakland, California school system, they have gone from serving 4,000 meals a week to 300,000 meals a week for people in need. In total, more than 15 million meals and counting from the Currys. So, Steph Curry, that is good work for a guy doing work for his community.
You're right there.
That's the big shot of the year,
man. Right, and 15 million meals.
It's when you see a guy who takes his platform and use it for a situation like this, use it to feed kids. And we know his wife is so involved, and she's a cook. She's tried her hand in restaurants, and she's doing so many things for her community. And the fact that she's able to get her husband on board with feeding people, which is her background, is a plus, because we all know sometimes the guys are just laser focused on their craft. And when you have a wife that's socially conscious like his wife and says, "Hey, let's do this." And he's like, "Yeah, let's do it," because he's a strong supporter of his wife in every situation, because, being in the public eye, she's had some naysayers go out there and he's backed her. So I really respect him for backing his wife and supporting her. And I know if I don't say this about my wife, me back and supporting her, because sometimes she thinks I don't, but I do. I back and support her all the time.
You posted on Instagram for Valentine's Day. You support her. I saw it. You're good.
Exactly.
You're in the clear. Yes. You're fine.
Yes. Okay. You did a good job. Put that out there because she's going to say, do you back and support me? And, yes, I do.
Yeah.
But you have to have that. And, you know, they are a great couple.
In, well, I mean, anytime you step up for kids like that.
Yeah. You have a song where you say you want to be a power couple like Aisha and Steph in a rap song. So you know you're doing something when you make a rap song.
Yes.
So all right. I really appreciate them giving to the community. And when you have guys step up like this, and when you get the organization behind you, it's like a pandemic in a great way, that more people get involved. And now you know, 15 million meals is a lot of meals, man.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, we worked with Shaq for years, and every year at Christmas he does Shaq a Claus, where he just gives and gives and gives to as many kids as he can reach out to through the Boys and Girls Club. And I mean,
you know, the great thing about that is because there's going to be one or two, hopefully more kids that are involved in that's going to remember what the Currys
hell
did.
Yeah.
And then they're going to go out and do the same.
Hell yeah.
You know,
pay
pass
it forward.
It on, right?
Yeah, pay it forward. All right, quickly, end of the show. We got to do the post-game presser. 5 questions sent to us by our listeners. If you have a question that you want to ask Rob or Jamie, myself, whoever, bigshotbobpod@gmail.com. And, of course, we're on Twitter and Instagram, bigshotbobpod. Rudy Gobert posterized Giannis this week with a really massive dunk. Robert Horry, have you ever posterized a guy in the NBA?
Just ask Rip Hamilton. You know, that's one of my favorite dunks because it was I was up in age, you know, 2005. I'm 35 years old. I'm not LeBron who can do it at, you know, his age.
36, man, running the court like a deer.
And able to take off and dunk on someone in the playoffs during game 5. That's probably my one posterized dunk.
In what Coach Kerr called a mediocre season thus far, we already talked about this. I had somebody ask me, could Steph Curry win the MVP if they're below 500?
I don't think he could. Even, and that's not, you know, people.
Not a shot at Steph. It's just.
Yeah. I was just about to say, there's going to be so many naysayers that are like, oh, you hate on Steph. No, we're not hating on him. It's just the facts of the situation. He's having a hell of a year, shooting it like crazy. I even said he's going to have a massive year before the season started. But he's just not on a winning team. And it takes a winning team to win an MVP.
The Super Bowl streakers bet, we talked about this last week, would have cleared $374,000 if he would have kept his damn mouth shut. But because he was online yapping about making the bet, Bovada canceled it. So have you ever won a big bet or a contest?
Yeah, I was at a hotel in Phoenix, and we had these rubber duckies that went down the lazy pool, and who's ever rubber ducky got to the end first.
The lazy duck race?
I beat out like a bunch of kids. It was great. That's
hell
like,
yeah.
Oh, you feel good about beating up a bunch of kids, huh, Jamie?
And then she posterized them. She was like, yeah, son.
Trophy, okay?
Yeah, son.
It's weird. The contest I remember was when I was a little kid. I think I was like 9 years old. They had this thing. I think it was Jack in the Box. But it was Jack in the Box before Jack in the Box is what it is now. But, you know, small towns, we have names and everything. And they had this raffle where you could win this duck. This duck probably was about 7 feet tall, a big old duck. And I actually won the duck. I won this big duck. I was so excited, right? I brought it home, and my grandfather looked at me like, what the hell are we going to put that big ass duck? I'm like, we're going to put it in the corner. And I used it as a chair. That was the first beanbag. I used to use it as a chair and sit in the duck and read my comic books because I won that duck. I was so happy I won something.
Oh, God.
I wish I had pictures back then, but, you know.
When I was like 8.
Family didn't have pictures.
I grew up in Jersey. We used to go to the boardwalk all the time and play all the boardwalk games. I won a Voltron when I was like 8 years old. And that was when you couldn't buy a Voltron anywhere. They didn't exist anymore.
That was crazy.
The best thing that ever happened to me as a child.
Hey, that was the thing. You just walk around school with Holden and all the kids
was like this
you.
Big. And you were just like, oh, I was like carrying around the Stanley Cup, man. It was just,
Just imagine this. If you'd have kept it in the box and you had it to this day
No
how
way.
Much money that would be worth.
I don't get, I can't. See, I was never a keep it in the box kid. I'm like, rip it open and play with it and throw it off the roof. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I'm all for it. The Britney Spears documentary was all over the place this week. I had someone ask me on Twitter, who would we like to see a documentary about, whether it's an athlete or a celebrity? Who do you want to know more about?
I don't know. It's
That's
just
a tough
so
question. Yeah.
Yes. So we have to pause the show right here and let me...
while Rob thinks.
All right, let's pause. How about you, Jamie?
I don't know. Are we looking at it? Because in the case of Britney, I think I just watched that documentary the other
How
night.
Is it? I haven't watched it yet.
Me either.
It's very interesting. And it's interesting from the perspective of here was this like young girl that was then put on this pedestal to then kind of be like knocked down, you know, and it was, so I'm using that thinking about, you know, athletes, you know, and I just watched the Tiger documentary.
I did too. That was very good. Yes. I would like to see a documentary, a true documentary on Thurgood Marshall, because I think Thurgood Marshall is one of those guys that in Black history that nobody really knows a lot about. Mm. You know, he's the first Black Supreme Court justice. And for me, I know there are movies out there and stuff like that, but I want an in-depth document because I've read books where you talk about how he was, you know, the lawyer for Martin Luther King Jr. He was a lawyer for Medgar Evers. He was a lawyer for Malcolm X. And I want a true documentary that just shows what he had to do and what he had to overcome to be the first Black Supreme Court justice. So I think I would have to go with him. Even though I was trying to think of an athlete, but no athletes popped in my mind.
That's okay. It's whoever you're most interested in, really. You know,
other than, you know, athlete, maybe Derek Jeter, because there's a lot of rumors out there about Derek Jeter, and we want to get to the bottom of that. So,
you talk about the lovely women that in Derek Jeter's life? Or?
I'm not going to say because I want Derek on the show.
Oh, you know, Jamie said it, the gift basket. Yes, the gift basket.
When we talked last time about, like, the memorabilia that we have. I actually have a Derek Jeter baseball, but I don't think I mentioned it because I didn't want to hear, like, oh.
Did it come in the gift basket, Jamie? Did you get it in the gift basket? Yeah, exactly. The most popular TV show in the world, our last question right now, is WandaVision. Which I'm a Marvel junkie, so of course I've been watching. What is the last TV show that you've watched and binged and loved?
For me, it's been I love WandaVision, and you know we talked about that. We love Marvel, and I have to put like 3 or 4 shows in the hole and then watch. I just can't watch one. I have to watch 3 or 4. But right now, I just watch Teen Titans.
All right, Jamie, what are you binging?
First of all, let me say that. Pre-pandemic, I only watched sports on television. I never watched TV, and now I watch like everything, and I'm voraciously like tearing through everything on like Netflix and Hulu and all that. So I just started the Lady and the Dale. You know,
Lady and the Dale.
The Lady and the Dale. The Dale was the name of the vehicle that.
Okay.
Car, interesting. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah.
But other than that, I went through Bridgerton and...
How is Bridgerton, by the way? Because everybody talks about Bridgerton. I have not watched 2 seconds of it.
So hot. Like, watch it just...
Yeah, it's a lot of sex.
I don't know who this actor is. No, it's not that much sex, but it's...
You just
notes.
Like the fact that you see his...
No, I'm taking notes. What is this? This is Bridgerton, right? Bridgerton.
Bridgerton, yeah.
Hey, when you see Bridgerton, are you going to think 10 toes up, 10 toes down? One brown ass going round and round. That's what you see. Because it's a lot of sex in that.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Well, if you have a question for the postgame presser, you can always send it to BigShotBobPod@gmail.com. We're also at BigShotBobPod. And Marshawn, how'd the show go today?
I'm going to go ahead and throw back this Caesar salad with these croutons and all this shit, though, right?
Good.
Go ahead and take me a nice fat shit, get my stomach all right and everything. Then I'm going to go out here and try to run for 200 on a 50-yard field like was at.
All right. Well, thanks for that. That's a visual to end the show on.
Oh. You guys have dogs? That's like a thing. My dog takes a dump when we go for a walk. We come back in the house and he has the zoomies. And
he's like, Marshawn, put him in the game. He'll run for 210.
Let me go.
Follow the show on Twitter @BigShotBobPod for links to all our guests and all sorts of fun. The Big Shot Bob Pod is a presentation of Live by Live's Podcast One and Podcast One Sportsnet.
Support for this podcast comes from Pluto TV. Need an escape? Drop into Pluto TV for a world of free TV. Stream hundreds of channels and thousands of movies and shows all for free. Yeah, free. No subscriptions, no fees. Imagine 24/7 channels of Narcos, CSI, Star Trek, Survivor, and everything else from hit movies to binge-worthy TV shows, the latest news, live sports, comedy, and more. What are you waiting for? Download the free Pluto TV app for Android, iPhone, Roku, and Fire TV and start streaming now. Pluto TV. Drop in, watch free.